Well, hello everybody, and thank you for joining me again on the Born to Talk Radio Show podcast. I so love what I do, and I'm so happy you're joining me today. My guest today is Sarah Cavallaro. She is the founder, president, and executive producer of Emerald Films. She is also an award-winning author. Her indie published novel is called Dogs Have Angels Too. And it won an Indie Reader Discovery Award for Best Women's Fiction. And she's also the co-founder and executive director of the nonprofit Art Above Ground. Hello, that's a lot of stuff. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Oh, hi, Marcia. Thank you for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Oh, you are, I would say this about you and the few times that you and I have been able to speak prior to this podcast. I find you to be so very humble, because you are so very accomplished, but you are the last person that I've ever seen patting themselves on the back going, aren't I the greatest? You are just really a remarkable woman. And I thought maybe you could just spend a few moments just telling our audience a little bit about yourself so we can get to know you.
Okay. I grew up in Ohio in a suburb in Cleveland. And then I went to Antioch College, which is located in Yellow Springs, Ohio, very small, beautiful little town, a liberal college. Then I moved to New York, and I went to John Jay College of Criminal Justice. And then I got into the whole entertainment business, which had nothing to do with criminology. And nothing. And so I had actually studied acting very briefly. And in one of my auditions, I went to, you know, to go for a commercial. And I met an aide, it's an assistant director. And he said, oh, you should, you know, get into the TV commercial business. You'd be great in sales. And I said, oh, okay, so what's that? I had no clue. And so I ended up becoming a production assistant for a couple of high-end TV commercial production companies in New York. And then one thing led to another, and I ended up getting into sales, becoming super, you know, really dedicated and successful in that. And then I ended up opening my own company. I was very young, actually, and I had the backing of a feature film company based in LA, which I am in now, actually. I named the company Emerald Films, and 28 years passed.
Wow.
And now I started to write, and I wrote a novel. I've written many, many things, plays and a couple of nonfictions, but I wrote a novel called Dogs Have Angels Too, and it was based on a play, and then I got it published, and it went through that whole road, and that was like 11 years ago. So that's, if I know I went quickly through this whole lifespan, there's so much to talk about, but that's kind of like the blueprint of me.
Yeah. But it's great, and I would just let people know that you do have a couple of really great websites, and Dogs Have Angels Too is one of them. And let's talk about that book. I think you published it. Did you publish that in 2011?
Yes.
Okay. So what was the inspiration behind that book?
Okay. So at the time, there was a lot of things happening in New York. There was a kind of like the aftermath of that 08 financial crisis. And in those 2 years prior to 2011, I saw a ton of colleagues lose their jobs and, you know, executives at big advertising companies lose their job. And this one woman lost her job. She was in her 50s and she was having a hard time. And I would often go to the park and, you know, watch people during lunch, my lunch break that I allowed myself if I could find that time, and observe other executives, and also talk to a lot of people. And so this one woman who had been kind of thrown out of her company sat next to me. She had was basically lost her job. Her husband left her. She had been losing her teeth, and she loved dogs. And so that, coupled with like four other things, inspired me to really get into finding purpose in life and people, how they redefine their lives in crisis and why they do and how they do. And that was the basis of this book.
So she was really your inspiration then?
Yes, she was. And also, her name in the book is Lena Schwartz, but she has a nickname, and I nicknamed her Miss Pink in the book because Miss Pink loves to wear pink. And so she had pink hair, she had pink clothing, and she was obsessed with pink. And so this is her story combined with a lot of other people that she helps, and the animals and the dogs, you know, all the dogs in need of homes. This is the inspiration, helping animals find homes and people find themselves.
It's so very interesting, Sarah, how we all find inspiration in different areas in our lives. You definitely have to have your eyes wide open or you're going to miss them. But I appreciate what you're saying, just like what you said, just sitting on that bench. So give us a little more information about the setting of the book.
Well, the setting's New York City because I moved there from Ohio, and I was blown away with how all of the life, and I was young when I moved there, I was 21. I was blown away with how people, they live, like they experience their life in front of you. Nothing is separated. Everything is kind of living on the street. So I'm a great observer. I love watching people and I love watching animals. So I would just watch people. So the inspiration is really the life of New York City. It's the people, it's their characters. Everything's a character. Even the bench that sits alone in you know, on Broadway, and you know, there's somebody sleeping on it. That becomes a setting. One flower that blooms, you know, underneath a tree becomes a setting. Everything is a setting that is aesthetically, like, you're not expecting it. It's an unexpected aesthetic, mm-hmm. or it's an unexpected behavior from somebody. And that's kind of where my setting is. It's Central Park, it's the streets of New York City, it's the animal control center, the shelter, the animal shelter, the people shelter, you know, the women's shelter too, you know.
So why did you choose it then? Was that just, were you just drawn to this?
Yes, completely. I was so, I love New York City.
Uh-huh.
I think that it represents the best of us, and also like the saddest part of us sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see so many things. The emotional part represents, people will help people. You know, you hear all these things, oh, no one helps anybody. Well, I've seen people help people in a second.
Mm-hmm.
Like they just come to action. They call to action. They really do help people. And I've seen people walk by people also that needed help. So I kind of see both sides of every part of humanity. And that is really important to me because it does keep me humble and it keeps me learning,
right.
Really learning.
I kind of call it eyes wide open. You know, if you if you walk with blinders and you just aren't aware and aren't paying attention, and this isn't to criticize people's behavior necessarily, but I'm just saying for myself and for you, because we share this in common, that when your eyes are wide open, you do see things that maybe somebody else would miss. And I'm just wondering, was your book drawn from your own personal experience?
Some of it was. Some of it was. I think that, and some of it is 100% fictionalized from, let's say, a nucleus of what I think is part of my life. Mm-hmm. And part of this is like the finding purpose, having a sense of purpose. For me, is the thing that makes me, it gets me up. I have no other reason to live if I don't have that in my life. And I need to have that every day. And it's changing too. It changes. And I believe that very strongly, I try to do my best in helping others, the animals or people. So right. That is all drawn. And also, I was very, very hurt when a lot of the people that I knew were losing their jobs. And that some of the characteristics of the main, of the characters are drawn from what I saw the people going through. You know, some would get so depressed. I knew a lady that, you know, tried to commit suicide. But it's not all about that. I also love the inspiration that you get from feeling down and then you pull yourself up and you feel completely like elated and you can help. Yeah.
That makes sense to me. I bet you, we have a lot in common. I don't have the background that you have, but I have interests that are similar to yours. And I tell people when I walk every day, because I walk about 4 miles a day, and I meet people along that walk, and I say, I've never met a stranger. And not everybody wants to talk, and I get that. I was born to talk. I've been talking for, I got in trouble for it when I was in school. Mm. And I find that when you, whether you're in the market or you're taking a walk or wherever you might be, sometimes there are people that may be feeling a little sad or lonely or whatever they may be feeling. And just somebody just taking a moment to just ask, hey, so how are you doing today? Don't you just, isn't this a beautiful day? Whatever that might be, sometimes that just that personal conversation could be very meaningful to somebody, and you might not have even realized it, but everybody wins on that kind of a situation, and I think you and I are similar in that regard. So back to the dogs. Mm. All right. I mean, I have a cat right now, but I did grow up with dogs. Did you have any dogs growing up?
Unfortunately, I did not. I had a little, my mother passed away when I was a little girl, and my dad was raising 4 kids.
Oh, my
And
goodness.
He did not have the bandwidth to go work full-time, support 4 kids. I mean, and I don't really blame him, although I desperately wanted a dog. So what I did was I found a cat and an abandoned cat. I took the little cat. It was a kitten, not a little baby kitten.
Uh-huh.
I took the kitten home and I put the kitten in my room, and my father, you know, heard the kitten cry, I guess, or mew, and he took the kitten away and put it where the, you know, mothers used to shop for their, one of these big shopping malls. But he put it where the kitten would be found, certainly by another woman. And that was my animal story, and that was it. I couldn't, he didn't want any animals in the house.
He didn't want any animals
in the house. No, he didn't. He just didn't want animals in the house.
Huh.
And he had his reasons. You know, one was he didn't feel that they could be taken care of properly, which I think that isn't true, but I think he didn't want any more responsibilities. I think he had his plate full. I know he had his plate full.
Sure. I'm just thinking about, you know, I'm learning things about you that obviously I didn't know, and I almost can't imagine what it was like to have lost your mom at a very young age. That must have been a tragedy.
It was a tragedy, for sure.
Wow.
I wouldn't want any girl, you know, any kid that grows up with, you know, losing their parent at a young age, I think is, they got a lot of things to deal with, you know. But you get through this, and that's what life, listen, that's what happened, you know. It's, that's, was my life. It's my life.
Right.
Everybody has their own life.
It's funny, Sarah. My husband was an engineer. People that know me know that about me. And we couldn't be more different personality-wise, which is why I think our marriage was so successful, because we were in very good balance. And he really, truly lived by it is what it is. And I was always the yeah, but person after that. Yeah, but he said, nah, it is what it is, period. Adapt. And you know, sometimes that's a lot easier said than done. Now, I was an adult when my husband died unexpectedly. To be a kid and lose your mom, you know, it is what it is not an easy application to something when you are a child. You're not supposed to, you know, hopefully lose your parents when you're a young person. And you know, then you get a kitten and then you can't keep the kitten. So I'm wondering, did you ever rescue any animals at all as a
Yes.
child?
Yeah, not as a child, but I,
Oh.
well, as a child, they took the little kitten home, but
Yes.
that's, but as an adult, a young adult in college, I did rescue an animal that actually is, was the main character in my book. And she, yeah, that's, so her name was Athena. And I was going to Antioch at the time, and we were doing some kind of, I can't remember, a research program or something, and I had gone to Dayton or Ohio to do this. And I decided for, I don't know why I decided this, but I ended up at the shelter there. They had, in those days, they were euthanizing animals, you know, a lot more than they are now. Okay. It was, this was in the 70s. All right. So all this dog rescue awareness did not really exist then. Okay. So I went into this, I'm not sure if it was an animal control center or just a regular shelter, I can't remember, but it they were euthanizing animals, and I saw a little puppy in the corner of a cage, and it was so cute. And I said, "I'm taking this little dog," and I adopted the dog, and her and I named her Athena, and I took her back to Antioch. And Antioch had dorm. I was living in a dorm. They did not allow animals. That dog lived with me for years in the dorm, and
Oh
no
my
one said
goodness.
any, and no one said anything to me. And then I moved to New York. So that was my first rescue, and primarily my only rescue in that way, in that I just, she became my everything.
What breed was she?
She's a, she was a mix of, she looked like a little fawn, like a little dear. She was so gorgeous. And but the thing is that she had she was very difficult to train, and she had a lot of bladder issues. And I don't know if this was inherent in her physical world, but she never, she always had accidents, like always.
Isn't it interesting that
So
you're
I put that
trying?
into, yeah, I put that actually all, a lot of these characteristics and Athena as a character, Athena's my main dog. I have other main dogs as characters, but she was the main one. And they, so that's an answer to your question.
But you know, what's interesting is you mentioned how she was in your dorm room. And I mean, my son works at a university, and at one time before he had the job he has now, he was working a residential life. That's what he got his master's degree in. And it's funny that they sort of just overlooked the fact that you had a dog in your room, right?
That was like such an anti, it was anti-rule, and nobody said anything. They were so sweet and kind.
That's terrific. Well, you
Yeah.
know, you must have taken very good care of her, because I mean, dorms, you know, there's requirements, and I assume you had a roommate, right?
No, I didn't have a roommate.
Oh,
I
okay.
had a roommate in my at the when at the beginning, but she moved out. So I ended up with the room alone.
And there you had, well, not exactly, huh? Oh man. Oh gosh. I guess she didn't bark, right? So that
She
people
didn't
didn't know.
bark.
Isn't that
She
something?
was, you know what? She was like the sweetest, cutest dog. You would, everybody loved her. They thought she would, they would come to my room and pet her.
Wow. Nobody
Yeah.
and nobody told on you, like, oh, you know, Sarah's got a dog in her room.
Can you imagine? Nobody. They were very cool, okay?
That's
That's
true.
the key with Antioch. Is the key, people were, the students were very cool, and it's a, it was a, you know, it's a liberal arts college, right? It was co the dorms, the showers were co-ed. That's how liberal it was.
Oh my goodness.
Yep.
Yes. Oh my.
And nobody looked at each other. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like crazy stuff that it is now.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So it sounds to me like animals have meant a lot to you in your own personal life, haven't they? Why don't you tell us more about that?
Well, they mean everything because I feel like they give unconditional love. And when I look in an animal's eyes, I feel very calm. And, you know, unless it's like a very vicious, you know, if you're going to deal with a guard dog or something like that.
Right.
But most pets are so nurturing. I love their smell.
Mm-hmm.
I love their fur. And they're just, I love them.
Yes.
I just love them. And I love horses too. So it kind of like goes with my feelings of animals. And so the thing is that when somebody abuses a dog, that's the other thing that I dealt with in my book, you know, is that they abandon dogs and they abuse dogs.
Mm.
So I wanted to bring awareness to that. And that's what Miss Pink does. She brings awareness to abandoned dogs by rescuing them. But she rescues them in a very entertaining way, Marcia, you know? Like she makes them, they entertain people. Like they become entertainers. She teaches them, you know, how to do tricks.
Oh, that's terrific. Yeah, I like I said, I did have a dog growing up, Bootsy. And we did not have cats. But when I got married, we did end up having cats. And my kids did grow up with cats. And, you know, I've been widowed now for a really long time, 16 years. But I do have a cat that I rescued. And rescued is not the right word. I adopted her from Annenberg Pet Space here in this Vista community. Mm. And you know, she means the world to me. I mean, she's the one that sleeps on the bed. She's the one that purrs. She's the one that looks at me and says, "Are you going to feed me?" "Yes, darling, I'm going to feed you." So, you know, we do get a lot. It goes both ways when it comes to pets. You know, we love them, but they love us. And that's the beauty of that. So, back to your book. You mentioned in your book that it offers a look at homelessness among women. And I'm just wondering, what do you wish more people understood about this?
Well, okay. So, you know, Miss Pink, as she's going through all these changes in the book, she gets thrown out of her apartment. And she has to live. She doesn't like the shelter that she was in. So she leaves the shelter. And she has to figure out a way to exist in New York safely. So she stays in coffee shops all night and she, you know, will sleep in the park in the day, Central Park. Central Park's a major location in my book. A lot of things happen in Central Park. So homelessness, I explored homelessness. And what I'm understanding about homelessness, well, at least I want to apply it to Miss Pink. She did everything to not appear homeless in that she was losing her teeth and she was always trying to find a job. That was before she became the rescuer at the animal control center and she started to rescue the animals. Before that, she tried to find a job. So when she was trying to find her job, she didn't look great. And she lost her teeth and her hair was, you know, turning gray at the roots and her clothes were a little bit tattered. So homelessness is like a spiral downward. You have to, like, if you want a job, you have to look a certain way. Okay? So that's the one thing. What people don't understand about homelessness is that it's a slow, if you're not a drug addict, okay? I don't know about the whole drug addict thing, but what I've understood about the homelessness is if you are depressed or there's a lot of mental illness, you know, women are so vulnerable and they try to appeal and appear in almost like they're not homeless. So they will do everything to not appear homeless. If And that's what Miss Pink did in this book. She tried to not appear homeless. But eventually, when she was homeless, she still tried to find her purpose. And her purpose was her anchor. And helping the dogs made her undepressed. She was not depressed anymore. So she could then help herself. So you have to be careful with, when you don't have a family around you that's supportive, or you friends, or you don't have a society that's supporting you while you're going through, let's say, a massive depression, you got to be very, and you have no money, you have to be careful.
Right.
Very careful.
You know, and depending upon what part of the country you live in, I mean, you and I are both in communities that have decent weather. But I know a little bit about homelessness. I've had some podcasts about that subject, especially teens. You see homeless a lot everywhere we go. And whether it's, sitting by a park bench or sitting by a bus stop or just roaming, I see the same woman walking every day. And I always feel so compelled just to stop and see if she could use some food or, if you're aware of this, you can't help but feel compassion, I guess is what I would say, because you don't want to see anybody be homeless. I understand that there's a lot of reasons for it, and mental health is certainly one of them, but, I think it's interesting that she's a character in this, and when we were talking about this book, I'm just curious if there was a particular dog or experience that inspired these shelter scenes in your book.
Well, the shelter of the dog or of the women?
Either one. We have time for both.
Well, I knew this transgender in New York who was kind of like a prostitute transgender. Uh-huh. And they'd be at the, on 13th Street, I can't remember. It was where they would slaughter the meat. It's called the Meat District. And now it's a very she, beautiful area, with cobblestone streets. It had cobblestone streets then, but this is expensive condos now. But 40 mm-hmm. years ago, it was where the transgender prostitutes would go. And she would live in she was living in a shelter, she, he. And they didn't accept her. Like she shuffled from a male shelter to a female shelter and back. And I would talk to her. And so that kind of inspired me to the whole, that inspired me about the female shelter scenes that are in my book. Mm-hmm. And the dog shelter was inspired by, I don't want the dogs to be, the dogs should not be euthanized. The shelter should be a place where they get rehomed and are loved, not, dumped and euthanized because there isn't a home.
And I don't know if you've noticed it, but there are certainly certain breeds that are more apt to be euthanized. I have a friend that works at Angel City Pit Bulls.
Well,
those pit bulls are just put down constantly, and it's unfortunate. It is very, very unfortunate.
Well, I have a scene with a pit bull in there, and that Miss Pink, his name Mr. Bull, and he's a black pit bull, and she is terrified of big dogs, incidentally. She has to get over her fear of big dogs, okay? She had been bitten at one point. So she falls in love with this pit bull, and they're going to try to kill him, and she tries to save him, and she does save this dog. And I have a whole story about that.
Nice.
And the gentleness, and, I have actually a monologue that she gives to this dog and to the reader about that it's not fair just because he's born a pit bull. I mean, I humanize it in that it's talking about this, exactly what you're talking about, the mm-hmm. the fear.
It's true. It's funny because, you know, any dog can bite. It's not like pit bulls are the only dogs that ever bite. And because of where I walk every day and because there are dog parks, multiple dog parks along my route, I see, as we're all seeing today, you know, gazillion doodles of all types.
Yeah, which is a whole other subject.
Yeah, but, you know, but I have to tell you, just because we have some time to talk about dogs, I just wanted to bring this up too. One of the I see two Dalmatians every day, and that's a breed that you don't see very often. And that's a beautiful, beautiful dog. And you don't see a lot of those dogs. I don't know if you do in your daily walks, but do you have a dog right now?
No, I don't have a dog right now.
But I see a lot of, you know, everything, well, all the doodles and all the sizes, but, you know, a lot of different interesting breeds. There's one guy that's on my walk that's actually on like a bicycle, and he's got five dogs, and he's like riding along, and he's getting these dogs on the walk. Anyway, it has nothing to do with your book, but, you know, I observe a lot of people with the dogs.
Well, the dog walkers are really an interesting culture, and you know, I also have a lot of dog walkers and really interesting dog walkers in my book that, you know, are walking 20 dogs in New York, and they're fabulous. I mean, they go and they pick them up, and all the dogs get along great, and they go to the park, and, you know, so
yeah, that's
nice.
So it sounds like you're hoping maybe that the readers take away from the theme of that parallel that you're bringing these together. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm bringing it all about people abandonment and dog abandonment. But I just wanted to, if we could go back to the homeless thing, I wanted to just talk real quick. Because on the website, I aligned with an organization. This is really interesting, Marcia, and it's super important about homeless people, okay? Homeless people, some of them have dogs and they love their dogs. And this organization, I think it's called Pets of the Homeless or Feeding Pets of the Homeless, what they do, and it's a national organization, is what they do. They provide food and medical care to the dogs of the homeless people so that these dogs are cared for. That is a big deal because you don't have to, any homeless person who has any dog in the United States.
Right.
Can go to this organization and they will give them food and medical care. Like, that's amazing.
It is amazing. I see that on your, I'm looking at your website right now, dogshaveangels2.com.
Right.
And under there it said, there's an area called Dog Rescue, and it says Feeding Pets of the Homeless since 2008.
Yes.
And that is exactly what you're talking about. And Pet It Forward Foundation, you have a lot of really interesting organisms. Pug Nation, that's funny. I don't have grandchildren, so I'm a grandma to a pug. But it's interesting because you know, we all know people that have animals in some form or another, and there are dog walkers that walk the dogs in my neighborhood all the time, and I'm very aware of them. And I don't know, I think pets really bring a lot of love to our lives. And I thought maybe you could take a moment from your writing or your rescue journey that's something that's really touched your heart personally.
On which part?
Well, you know, you talk about your writing and you talk about your rescue journey. I just didn't know if there's, between the two, both, we have the time for this. If you'd like to just share a little bit about what's touched your heart in your writing journey as well as your rescue journey.
Well, I thank God that I can write right now, you know, that I have the space, the time, the good health to write. And that is probably one of the most important soul journeys that I'm on right now. That is for sure. So all of that touches my heart. All the ability and that the universe is accommodating me to do this is I'm grateful. That's one. Two is if I can continue to bring awareness to animals that are being abused, if I can continue to do that, that I will feel like there's great value, and that touches my heart, as well as to try to help, you know, the homeless if I can in my way. I'm trying to do things the way that I would do them. I don't know. I'm not doing it in a traditional way. I don't belong to a lot of organizations, you know, that, you know, I don't work at them, you know, a lot of nonprofits that help animals. I just support them through hopefully donating when I can sell a piece of merchandise or a book. I donate and try to help them in that way. Nice. Or I bring awareness to them through, like, whatever, the media or however I can do that so that they can carry on their good work, because that's what they're doing. So these things touch my heart.
Well, I can see why it does. And I think that probably a lot of people that are listening to our conversation are shaking their head up and down going, me too. That's why I have a dog. That's why I have a cat. That's why I rescued an animal. I think that it's really meaningful. We need to find purpose. Listen, I feed the birds every day in my backyard. And including the squirrels and the crows, which I know annoy people. But I feel like, you know, it brings me joy to be able to do that and to know that they're eating and going to the ponds and feeding the ducks every day. That brings me joy that I know that they're eating. I educate people because I didn't mean to sidetrack here, but I because I do feed ducks every single day on my walk, the mallards, what I've learned is that you don't know what you don't know, and you would probably agree with that as well. If you didn't know that feeding ducks bread is the worst thing in the world you could give a duck, and you're doing that because you didn't know any different, I'm going to gently tell you, please don't give the ducks bread. It's the worst thing in the world you can give a duck is bread. It clogs the digestion. Oh, I didn't know that. Well, what do you give them? I said, well, I have bird seed, but that's because I feed birds as well. But I know ladies that give them frozen peas or give them chopped up lettuce. What you don't want to give them is bread. And so I feel it's incumbent upon me when I see something that bothers me. I don't mean to make this about me because the show is about you, but it's the same thing with how you feel about the dogs, you know. Not all pit bulls are going to chew your leg off, you know. That's not the case. There was a very famous person that gave pit bulls a very bad connotation. We won't talk about him. But, I think that animals bring enormous joy to our lives. And I didn't mean to sidetrack us, but I do know that you did win an award as being the best when you won the Women's Fiction from the Indie Reader Discovery Awards. And when was that? Was that recently or was that?
No, award? It was in 2013.
That's what I thought. Okay. How did that feel to get an award like that?
Well, I was completely surprised because I wrote the book because I needed to write the book, and that I was working with an indie publisher at the time, a small press, and they had submitted it to award organization, and and then I won Best in Women's Fiction from that organization, from Discovery Awards, and I didn't expect it. I was like, I thought, like, are you sure it's me? You know, I told them to read the title.
Oh my God, you're so funny. How long did it take you to write that book?
Well, the book is based on a couple of really interesting things besides, like, all of the personal stuff. I'd written a two-character play.
Okay.
And I had workshopped it at the Actors Studio, Writers Directors Lab, when Lee Grant was the the temporary director, and I did scenes, and it was between a woman and a called Cindy and Bill is the name. They're two young couple living together who have a dog, and they're fighting over this dog, and he wants her to surrender this dog because the dog pees everywhere and he can't handle it, and you know, and so then they fight. And so I started with that relationship for the book, and they are actually in the book as one, as she's a character, Cindy, in the book, and Bill is also a character. And Athena is actually her dog that she abandons, that Miss Pink adopts and won't give her back her dog unless she learns to prove to Miss Pink that she can take care of a dog and not surrender a dog just because some guy doesn't like it. So she ends up breaking up with the guy. So that's kind of like a story within a story. It started with that play, and it took me, after I workshopped those characters, and I was working with actors, and they were like totally in love with these characters. I said, okay, I'm going to build it from there, and I'm going to build it from my knowledge of Miss Pink on the, you know, the sitting at Central Park. And, you know, all of these things came and culminated into the story. So I would say it took me about a year to, and I was working, you know, running my own business at the time, running my TV production company. So it took me about a year after the workshopping of the play. And the workshopping was maybe 6 months at the Actors Studio Writers Directors Lab.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Whenever I talk to authors, everybody has their own story. And some authors that I speak to will say, I always have a book in the works. I always have a book in the works. Is that the case for you as well?
I'm writing another book right now.
Well, and I'm writing a book. That. Okay.
I'm going to
hold you up on that because I want to come to that in just a little bit. So if you don't mind, hang on to that thought because I wanted to ask you one other question, and that is, some authors tell me that they just take notes. Other people, they tell me they go to their computer. Do you have a certain style of the way that you write?
No.
Okay. I was just curious about that. Okay.
I don't. I'm everywhere. Like I'll extrapolate. You know, you could be in the bath and ideas come to you. I could listen to you and ideas come. I could be eating. I could do anything. Ideas come. Then you have to work on those ideas and develop them. And then, you know, the computer is the place where I would put it down. But it's always in the rewriting that I find my stories. But they always come from a very deep place within me that I have to deal and heal with. I have to go through that process.
That makes sense. Do you ever, because of the technology that we have today, I don't know if you do this, but sometimes when I get an idea about something and I'm not near my computer, but my phone is always attached, I'll send myself a text and say, oh, you know, you need to think about XYZ. So that, or I have post-it notes all over my office, just as a reminder. Do you ever do things like that?
I have paper in my purse and pens, and I write everything down.
That's great, because sometimes we just forget, you know, and it's sometimes that inspiration is there for the moment, and then you get distracted by whatever else you're doing. So I was curious about that, and I noticed that you mentioned that you're building a dog rescue brand, and I'm wondering what your hopes are for that.
Well, I'd love for it to be successful.
Me too, Sarah. Oh, my goodness.
And I would, so the dog rescue brand is obviously a storytelling that brings awareness to dog rescue and the people that rescue them, but also it encompasses these really cute T-shirt designs with affirmations, positive affirmations from the book, like love multiplies or, you know, power to the underdog. And then they have illustrations. And I've put them on T-shirts, coffee mugs, and then a little canvas bag. And I'm hoping that's part of the brand. And then part of the brand that I'm working on developing is we had commissioned a screenplay adaptation of the book. So there's a group out there trying to align with other film people, financial people, producers, studio, to get that moving along. So this is all attached to The Dogs Have Angels too.
Nice. Is there a reason why you chose a bulldog as that picture?
It's so cute. I love the little bulldog.
Yep.
It's just so cute to me. It's just a sweet, cute image.
Yeah, and they snore.
Yeah, my brother has one, and it snores like crazy.
Yeah, my son has a pug. It snores. It's funny. The animals are so funny. So what are some of the upcoming projects or initiatives that are related to your book that you're really excited about?
Well, I'm really doing, I love doing these I love podcasts. I think that it's a great way to communicate. So I'm grateful, Marcia, that you invited me as a guest on this. And that's one of the initiatives, is to get out there as much as possible and talk about this. So that's an initiative. The second initiative is to work with these producers and, help them tell this story so that they can get the funding to make this into a movie. And the third one is to align with the rescues and keep supporting them in the ways that I'm supporting them is actually through just talking about them. And obviously, when I get funding to give them a piece of that. So these are the initiatives related directly to the book.
We're sort of in a financial issue right now in Los Angeles that we just won't get into, but with the rescues. But are you familiar, just personally, because I know that we live in the same area, are you familiar with Angel City Pitbulls?
I'm familiar with them through the website.
Yeah.
And for sure.
Yeah, they are, that's quite the place. So you have a lot of background in so many areas. My hands, if you saw me right now, you'd see my hands are just like wide open going, holy cow, girlfriend, you do a lot. So do you see this as a TV series or a movie down the road? I think it would be great.
Yeah, I definitely see it as a movie for sure because of the screenplay adaptation. So that would be the first thing that we've really moved forward on that. It took about a year and a half to get this screenplay. I went through about four drafts so far. So there's that. And then the TV series would be amazing because I think that to just do it on the people that rescue the animals, they're very interesting people, rescuers. And I would have the main character to remain as Miss Pink, but all the people that surround her, and all their individual stories, like what makes them rescue animals? Who are they? So I'd love to kind of delve into, how TV series delves into their backstories. I would love to have that as part of this television series. So that is, it's kind of like the Cheers. I know that's dating it a bit, but it's almost like the dog rescue version of Cheers, if I can say that. It takes place in one location. Then eventually, sometimes they take their walks, they're like Pied Pipers. Then they meet like meets like, and then that develops. So, yeah, I mean, that would be great if it goes that way.
That's really neat. I'm thinking about just your lifestyle, and I'm just thinking about how you balance all that you do. Where do you find the balance in your daily life?
I have, every day is a different day and every day has a different sense of responsibility. I like to write every day, so I will write a couple of hours per day, but I get up very early and so I can write, in the more early mornings, because that's when I'm very clear. And then my day starts like anybody else's day. And I have obligations and responsibilities to a nonprofit that I'm a co-director of, an art nonprofit. And I work closely with that.
And why don't you tell us? We have some time. I mentioned that you were involved in an art nonprofit. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. My husband, who is a world-renowned artist, his name's Cosmo Caballaro. He works a lot with perishables, and we had done chocolate cheeses, became a number one news story, a cheese house, Twiggy and cheese room, ham on a bed, ketchup classroom. His Cosmo Caballaro. That's it. So we formed a nonprofit a couple of years ago, maybe 5 years ago, called Art Above Ground. Basically, it produces public art, but it uses perishables. So Cosmo, he did a sculpture installation on the border of the United States and Mexico in the Tecate, California, Tecate, Mexico. He built a cheese wall on the border. And
actual cheese?
A real cheese wall. And when the old wall that was built, like I think in the 60s or 70s, was being, this was in 2016, 17, 18, around there, when the old wall was being torn down and the new wall was being built. Remember the new wall with all the big slats? The new wall. So for about 4 hours, the only wall that existed between those two countries was Cosmo's cheese wall. And that's a very ironic, bizarre thing that I'm saying. We did not plan that. That happened spontaneously. We had rented, I think, 13 or 14 acres on that border. It was flat land, very quiet, very beautiful area. And so this is the kind of work we do. It's very public. It has another saying, you know. It has different meanings for different people. The artist has his statement. I just want to raise the money and support what he wants to do.
Nice.
And so that's kind of what Art Above Ground is all about. For the people, you know.
So I'm thinking, you said you rise up really early in the morning. It's relative. How early is early for you?
Well, for me, what's early is 5 o'clock, and okay. I start to write at 5.
Okay.
I'm up at 4:30, and I start to write around 5, and I'm probably finished by 8:30,
uh-huh.
And then I'm clear. You know, I get a lot of work done.
Right. It's very quiet. I'm not up quite as early as you are, but I do wake up early, like you had mentioned. I wish I actually slept a little bit more at night than I do, but it's just what it is.
Well, you have to go to bed earlier then, because that's what I found. Like, if I can get to bed early, I can get 7 hours in there.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, 6 or 7, which is great.
That's nice. You know, life is all about balance, don't you think, Sarah? I mean, you're married, so you have, maybe you said this and I just didn't remember. Do you have children as well?
I have a 42-year-old son who is okay. An incredible psychologist, and he lives in New York City.
Nice.
And he is really into the mind-body experience. He just talks about the whole spiritual aspect of our existence, but from a traditional psychological point. That's uh-huh. his field of discipline. So that's what he does. And he's married to a lovely, my daughter-in-law is a psychiatrist.
Wow, goodness.
Wow. So, and she's an amazing, amazing person. So in that mental health area, there's a lot of information.
Exactly. Well, you know, for me, I find yoga to be very beneficial for me and my balance. I mean, yes, I do walk many miles a day, but if I didn't take the time to do some breathing exercises, I don't mean I have to have downward facing dog every 5 minutes, but I do need to understand how to breathe and not bring my shoulders as earrings, but bring them down so that you see you giggle because you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes there's just so much going on and it's like, oh my God, your shoulders are way up there. And it's like, bring them down, dude. You know, they're not supposed to be earrings. Calm down. And yeah. I have post-it notes all over my office that mm-hmm. have me calming down. just to remind myself, take a deep breath. Just take a deep breath, because you just, because that's important for our well-being as well. And you know that to be true as well, because you have a full lifestyle. And I'm sure if you were to look at your younger self, you probably, I don't know what advice you'd give your younger self looking back when you were a child, what you'd say to yourself today. What would you say?
I would say what I say to myself now, which is go for it, honey.
Go for it, honey. There you go. Yeah. And high five it, right? Go for it, honey. Oh my gosh, that is great. I think go for it, honey, is good. And not everybody, listen, not everybody wants to do that. And I respect that as well. Not everybody wants to go for it. But I do think that kindness is incredibly important. Mm-hmm. And one of the post-it notes that I have on my desk right now says, be kind to yourself, you will be okay. But the other thing is, if you don't know how to be kind to yourself, you don't know how to be kind to others. And I believe that you are a kind person, and that's why you are able to be kind and listen to people, to support these animals, and to do the good work that you do, Sarah, because you are making a difference for people.
I hope. I mean, I hope. I hope that I, when I leave this earth, that I can feel like that happened, you know?
I believe that to be true. And I just enjoy getting to know you. I've enjoyed your story. I think that your website really gives people great opportunities to know more about what it is you do, and also the rescue that you're involved with. Because, you know, life has to have a purpose. Everybody's purpose is not the same. I'm not trying to judge somebody else's purpose. It's great if you know your purpose. And once you know your purpose, then it helps sort of guide you on a path, right? I didn't expect to be widowed. I would not have been doing podcasting if my husband was still alive. But you don't know where your life's going to take you. And you can either dig a hole and just bury your head in it, or you can step out of that hole and say, well, now what? What am I going to do now? How am I going to live a life that brings me joy, right? Don't we want to have a joyful life?
Yeah, that's our obligation. That's the obligation. I mean, we should feel obligated for that, because there's why be born? I mean, joy is so important.
I would agree. Well, I've loved having this conversation with you, Sarah. I've enjoyed getting to know you and to share your story with our listeners. And that brings me joy. So I want to thank you for being here with me. We're going to all be looking forward to that TV series or that movie. We'll keep people posted. And I just want to say thank you once again for being my guest today.
Thank you, Marcia. It was so wonderful. Thank you so much for having me as your guest. I love talking to you about all of this. Hope we can do it again.
And we will, because you've got more to come, my friend. So because we don't live very far from one another, we're going to have to meet in person, all right?
For sure. Absolutely.
Okay.
For sure.
All right, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Thanks so much for listening. Bye for now.